You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. I'm your host, Erin Marlowe, and each week I'm joined by a panel of guests to discuss all things fandom and pop culture, primarily from a female perspective. You'll find everything from fanfic to cosplay to Schitt's Creek to Supernatural and everything in between. So put on your favorite piece of fandom merch, set aside that fanfic that you're writing about your OTP, and sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to this special episode of It's a Fandom Thing. Today, I'm honored to be virtually sitting down with filmmaker and debut thriller writer, Andrew Dean. His debut novel, Surfacing, follows the story of a splinter division that operates behind locked doors. They're tucked away in the basement of Washington, D.C., far beyond the reaches of the CIA. From 9/11 to the ongoing pandemic, they've hunted and eliminated high-level targets. But their targets aren't of a foreign threat. They're fellow Americans. In the book, when a new recruit is absorbed into the hidden fold of the government, she's immediately thrown into her first assignment under the guidance of a veteran operative. It quickly becomes clear she's witnessing the division turning a new page, further blurring its line of right and wrong. Having only one another to lean on, both will have their morality and skill set tested in the highest of stakes to make it out alive. Andrew Dean studied film and screenplays in Orlando. Shortly after graduation, he went on to write and produce his first feature-length film, Fronteras, tackling the hot topic of the border crisis with Mexico. Drawing heavy inspiration from Tom Clancy, Andrew enjoys diving deep into military thriller and conspiracy themes. Currently, Andrew resides in Nashville, Tennessee, and stays busy turning his screenplays into novels. So, Andrew, I'm very honored to be sitting down with you today. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Sure, of course. So Surfacing opens with what appears to be a legal disclaimer. And it also includes quite a few redacted areas in the text, especially like you don't see any last names. And then sometimes locations are redacted. And I mean, you even have in there, like you won't be able to protect anyone if they get seen with this and that. I know you're a filmmaker, so I don't know if that kind of inspired that too, or what. Why did you choose to include this in your novel?
I mean, I've kind of, being my filmmaker background, I wanted to really set the tone of what you're getting into as soon as possible. So even though it is a work of fiction, I thought I might just try to spice up what is usually a boring copyright disclaimer and try to, you know, jazz it up about it being more secret and it more like something you're not supposed to be reading. It's something that you've stumbled upon, and further redacting names and locations, like you mentioned, I think just helps continue to carry that tone from cover to cover.
Yeah, and especially when, you know, when it first starts out and it's just the last names that are redacted, and mm-hmm. then a few chapters in, then you redact a place, and then it's just kind of like, so you're not sure what is going to be redacted either. So that kind of keeps you on your toes too, like, oh, well, then this was the more important thing. And this is the more dangerous thing, maybe, that I wasn't supposed to know, but this location is okay. So mm-hmm. that was interesting too, because I've never read a novel that did that. So
I'd thought about it and I was curious if people were going to get it and thought that they got some sort of like mistake. You know what I mean? Like something got blacked out during the printing process. And I was like, I'll just got to go with it. So,
well, I think, you know, I mean, I think the setting it up in the beginning is what sets the reader up for knowing that maybe that's what's to come, that maybe, you know, mm-hmm. So I think that helps. But yeah, I thought that was really, really an interesting way to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the novel takes place in several different time periods and countries and locations. So it's a work of fiction, but still, you know, there are real events that are discussed in the book and stuff. So I'm assuming there was a lot of research that went into this then as well.
Yeah. I mean, the way I wrote it, I like to, when things pick up speed, I like the idea of things almost happening in real time. So in terms of doing like time jumps, making sure that I'm on the right time zone for one is important. and then, like if I jump back in time, like I think I jumped back to 2007 at one point, making sure when I'm referring to people in political office that it's the right person and whatnot. So that, and I grew up pretty close to one of the countries, Mexico. I grew up in Arizona. So it was a little difficult to juggle those things, but you slip up one time with a detail like that and anything these days will pull somebody out of a story pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, and people tend to grab onto those things more than they do the positive thing.
Oh, yeah. A little tiny thing will stick out and kind of overshadow anything else.
So, yeah. Or they'll be, you made this mistake, so you must not know what you're talking about or something.
Yep.
Like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the novel opens from Teddy's point of view, and Teddy ends up working with Avery, she's the new recruit. But Teddy is working with the division He comes off as very cold and seems to show no feelings about killing people. But as the novel progresses, well, I won't give too much away, but it kind of seems like that's a little bit of a cover for something. But do you think, though, that Teddy has become numb due to this line of work, or do you think the work plays into who he really is, possibly deep down?
I think because given the umbrella that he works under at the division, having higher ups such as Abe and then the guy who runs it, Hank, there's definitely a little bit of a brainwash factor there where it's, you get it beaten to your head enough that the people you're going after have done wrong. Like, I mean, if you actually truly support, the flag, then you'll get this done. Cause if you don't, then, to me, then you're kind of just a traitor as well. So basically I would say that they found him and saw an opportunity to take somebody that was, a sharpened soldier and kind of turn him into something else. But, I would say, at least when I wrote him, because Teddy is actually the name of my dog, and he's also very, old as well, and his body's wearing down, but doesn't let it stop him from what he does daily. But I would say that, before then, Teddy was probably a very soft soul, and then kind of found his calling or his way, at least within the military, and then it's kind of unfortunate that this is how he came out on the other side of the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I think with Teddy, what you see with Teddy is what you can see with a lot of people that do end up in the military, or sometimes that where you kind of have to shut off a part of yourself in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably I'm not sure that's what you intended, but it sounds like it with what Teddy was going through. And that's what...
No, you're 100% spot on with that. It's kind of a mindset of shut this emotion off, do the work now, and I'm sure eventually we'll deal with it emotionally later. It's probably going to be ugly, but we don't have time to think about it right now. So mm-hmm. yeah.
And Abe, who you mentioned, Abe does tend to have that same kind of thing too. Abe is kind of shut off too, but I think since there's so much in the beginning that's told from Abe's point of view, it seems like he does actually really, he's kind of fighting against that part of the humanity that's still there. And it seems like with the alcohol, he's kind of drowning out any of that feeling. Was that the intention behind that too?
Yeah. I mean, everyone, I think even outside of the military has their own vices with the way that they cope day to day. And I think also Abe, granted, he's not the one actually pulling the trigger on anybody, but he is caught in the middle between the division director and then, Teddy as well, the trigger man. So he's kind of getting both sides if there's any pushback. So I feel like he's under the most pressure, and he just happens to be the one that, the way he copes and numbs with it, it happens to be through quite a bit of whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you, because it goes back and forth in time with him too. And you see that in like, sort of like in the early 2000s, it didn't seem like he was drinking as much.
Yeah.
And then when it's in present day, he's definitely drinking a lot more. So,
yeah, it just becomes that thing. I mean, I've known people where like from the time they wake up, but you know, it's instead of like a glass of orange juice, it's a glass of, you know, insert, you know, whatever you like to drink. So, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he ended up finding himself, in his position, a lot longer than he anticipated. And, the way to keep at it is, just always have a glass in your hand.
Yeah. And especially when he's dealing with the fact that I don't know if this is true, but it seems that Abe does have some kind of maybe big brother or fatherly instinct in a way when it comes to Teddy too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like he, I don't know, there's part of that he's worried about Teddy as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, he, like, I think if, you know, mentions a few times, like he knows like how much physical pain Teddy's in day to day because, you know, he's just wearing down his body, but it's a guy thing where it's, you know, you don't want to get emotional with your buddy, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know you're hurting, but we're not going to talk about this. Like, you know, you'll sit out when you have to, but of course Teddy will never sit himself out. But yeah, I mean, definitely the fatherly instinct that Abe has, you know, being the older brother of you know, the guy that, you know, we talked about in the earlier 2000s in that one chapter. Mm-hmm. He can't be around his younger brother that much anymore, who's off doing his own thing. So, you know, you spend enough time around anybody and you know, if they're younger, you kind of take them under their wing more or less. So it's just kind of a really odd circumstance that they're both in.
Yeah. It's a heightened circumstance than just a normal relationship like that. Yeah. And then, of course, in the beginning, Abe is looking for a new partner for Teddy. And Teddy, in the beginning, talks about how basically he hasn't liked anybody he has been paired up with because he's always thought they just are kind of incompetent. They're not up to the standard. They can't last in this job at all. And then Abe, you know, there's a lot of chapters of him going around trying to recruit somebody.
Yeah.
And that's when Avery comes in. And it's interesting to throw a female in this dynamic because, you know, especially having a powerful female character and you go into some of her past with her father and everything like that. So was that very intentional that you wanted it to have that dynamic of having a woman thrown in here? And what was the inspiration for that character?
Well, I mean, what's funny is up until I think about 2 weeks before I locked everything, Avery was actually a man.
Oh, wow.
And I had thought about it. I don't know if we'll land on the same airstrip with this, but as of lately, I mean, I miss when women in film and stories were written like Ellen Ripley from Aliens or Sarah Connor from Terminator, just like really badass, strong women. But it wasn't because they're like, hey, it's a strong woman. It's because of how strong the character is written and the qualities that they possess. And they're just dropped in the story and they do what they do. And that's why you like them. It's never shoved in your face about what gender they are. And I was like, I could change not a word of dialogue from Avery, make it a woman. And it would be, you'd never know. So I didn't want to make her any more like girly or dainty. I was like, there's plenty of women that know how to survive in the wilderness. Like,
oh yeah,
there's tough women out there. And for how much I, you know, complain about it, I was like, why don't I just take a crack at it? So Avery was completely written the same way that you read it. I made it a woman and I couldn't sleep on it. So I changed it. It was a pain in the ass, but but there's actually since 2019, I think women, about 50 women have made it actually through the Army Ranger, you know, training courses. So that part wasn't embellished on at all. And I just thought it would be interesting to bring a woman into this predominantly male ran division. mm-hmm. especially when she has to meet the division head, who's very old school and probably never imagined a woman being under his roof. But then she, you know, she kind of proves, you know, what she can do, and, you know, ends up mixing with Teddy pretty well, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, for Teddy, that took Teddy by surprise too, because Teddy is very, and Teddy's so guarded too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting with that. I believe, and I could be mistaken on this, but I believe actually with Ripley in Alien, they actually wanted that to be a man, and then they're like, nope, this is definitely going to be a woman. So it's interesting to do that kind of
yeah. There. And I mean, and no matter, I mean, I don't know if anybody would deny it, but I mean, there's definitely, you immediately look at a character differently if it's a woman versus man, especially what kind of job it's set in. You know, I think if you're reading for a woman, you kind of lower your guard a little bit when you're reading for her. I don't know if that makes any sort of sense, but I think coming into like this very fast paced, dangerous job that she's going to be in, to have it be a woman kind of, I think, subverted expectations for maybe stuff that you had seen or read in the past, and you kind of curious to see how she's going to go about it and if she's going to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I think I think it took even Abe by surprise that's who he decided. Mm-hmm. Although it seemed like it was kind of like this like light bulb moment for him with watching her.
Yeah, I mean, he knew that, like, because Teddy's going to hold on to his position, you know, being the trigger man as long as his body will allow it. So Abe knows there's no way he's going to find a replacement to do that. So it's the best thing he can do is find somebody to complement his skill set with something maybe he can't do as well anymore. So it happened to be her. And it's interesting too, because like I said, Hank, the division director's very old school, where this would have been something that's never going to happen. And then Abe's a little bit younger, so he's in the middle of the transition where it's happening. And then Teddy's a little bit younger, so he's more used to seeing women more so in male roles. So it kind of trickles down interesting as she, you know, comes into contact with each of them.
Yeah. And do you think that she, once she starts working with the division, do you think there's a part of her that instantly kind of regrets the decision or regrets what has happened or the direction?
I mean, I definitely didn't want her to, I think, do what a lot of people would initially expect maybe her to do, is freak out and try to back out right away. So, I mean, I didn't, no matter, even, you know, even as a guy, like it was originally written as a guy, there was going to be some pushback, you know, as anybody would when you find out what you're, what you're being brought in to do. But I think really, you know, given her upbringing with how kind of cold shoulder and callous her, you know, her dad had brought her up, it really kind of, I think, you know, set the tone and prepared her a little bit for, you know, if she was going to stay in uniform. So, Yeah.
Her upbringing is really, really interesting. And reading that chapter, I think, is one of the most interesting when you keep going through the time periods with her dad and how that was raised. And I don't think she'd be doing what she was doing without that, of course.
No, yeah, totally. Okay. You can tell that her dad wanted, if he had to have a kid, he wanted it to probably be a boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but either way, you know, some sort of effort to spend time with your kid, you know, it just, you know, it's a very, very odd way to spend time, but it definitely forged her into something useful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing is directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
What do you think? I know this is, you know, kind of hard sometimes to answer, but what do you think are the essential elements to writing a thriller?
Well, I would say being able to know when to press on the gas pedal, you know, more metaphorically, of course, and being able to have restraint and not, you know, keep things like fast paced all the time, like a feeling of a sense of dread, I think, is important. And making sure that your characters, I think, are strong enough and developed enough to really earn those moments when you want to hit the gas pedal, you know, harder sometimes than others. Otherwise, if you don't care, then you could have the craziest of stakes and nobody's going to care what happens to who they're reading about. So just making sure that all the moments you push for are actually earned, I would say. And, you know, a nice slow tension buildup. I love slow burners that with a nice payoff.
Yeah. I think those are a lot better than just if you're constantly in action, moving, it can become exhausting.
Oh, yeah. It's sensory overload. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And so your characters are very strongly written. And I know you were kind of briefly mentioning that about how I think a character is very important. So do you... when you were setting out to write this or when you're writing anything, do you first write the characters or the plot?
This was my first novel that I wrote. It had been a screenplay. Everything for me is plot first. And then I kind of, as I'm writing the plot, I'm just kind of, a lot of times when I'm brainstorming dialogue, a lot of it just kind of ends up developing itself. You know, certain people tend to come out of my head a little bit, you know, more this way or the other way. And then when you comb back through it for more drafts, you just tend to sharpen, you know, either their wit or lack thereof. I'm a huge plot guy first. I don't know if you can agree, but pretty much everything lately is either lacking plot because it's very heavy CGI in your face, you know, just a giant noise fest to kind of distract you from a lot of plot holes.
No, that's true. I think, you know, it's hard to find those really, really deep movies that also can have a really engaging plot, or those movies that really keep you, because it is, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with like CGI. There's nothing wrong with all that stuff. It's just sometimes if you don't have like a good story behind it or good characters, then there's nothing else there.
No. And I don't need not every movie has to be like an Inception, you know, like that insane plot where it's intertwined and everything. But I mean, like, even just like a nice simple, like I was watching something the other day, it was just a bank robbery movie in Texas and it had two main characters, but I mean, their banter was just so entertaining. You kind of forget that it was just a bank robbery movie. So
yeah. Was that the one that was with Chris Pine? And
that's
Jeff
the
Bridges?
One. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
oh, that's such a good movie.
And I now, love that
how,
movie.
How am I forgetting the name of that movie? High.
It's Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water. Yes. Yeah. That movie is really good. Yes.
I love that movie.
And very well written and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very well. Yeah. And it's so simple, but it's, you know, sometimes simple is, you know, the one that brings it home.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I agree completely. Well, you got your start working in the film industry as a screenwriter, producer, director. How did that experience help you with tackling writing this? And I know this started as a screenplay. But,
no, yeah, totally. Really what happened was, I've made one movie. And that was, you know, the one that I had a lot of luck with in terms of getting it bought and sold to Netflix and Amazon and all that. I enjoyed that process a lot. It definitely helped, you know, me have to sharpen, you know, I guess, sharpened between transitioning scenes on paper, because when you watch it on screen, you're like, well, that sounded so much better on paper, so why didn't that translate visually? So, but I mean, it definitely, you know, it takes a village to make a movie, and it's even harder to make a good movie. So, being able to wear all those hats, like screenwriter and producer and director, I mean, you just learn how to deal with a bunch of types of different personalities, you know, seven questions coming at you at once that need to be answered right now. And I'm an introvert. So taking that seat was a bit of a tough undertaking, but, I would absolutely do that again if the opportunity came to me.
And like you said, it is, you know, it's very collaborative. There are tons of people working on making a film. But when you're writing a novel, and of course, screenwriting too, to an extent too, it's writing is a very solitary process.
Yes.
So, and I know you said you're an introvert. So I don't know, was there something that you preferred with writing, or do you prefer that collaborative thing?
The collaborative is fun because it forces me out of my comfort zone. To be in a bigger group of people, and everything is very fast paced, even though, you know, it takes your shoot day can be 12 hours. It's still very much go, go, go at all times. So it's nice to take a break from being an introvert, but you know, really, I mean, I enjoyed, you know, the solidarity of turning it into a novel because I could work at my own pace. I think I would consider myself, especially by other author's standards, a very slow writer. I can only write for about an hour and a half to 2 hours a day. But I prefer to, I don't like doing, like, you know, 11 drafts. I'd rather take my time and try to get it right the first one or two times. But no, I think I really enjoy, you know, the solidarity of novels, more so than the collaborative of filmmaking. It's just, it's nice waking up early and then I can do it at my own pace. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, unless it turns into a film, it is the finished product. So it's not like you're starting with just the quote unquote blueprint and then moving on. It's the actual finished product. So yeah.
Well, what's nice too, is that because I have all these screenplays, I mean, I essentially have, you know, very well written outlines, I guess, for the book. You know, I've got all the story beats ready and the dialogue ready. The difficult part, you know, is changing formats. I don't know if you've ever looked at a screenplay format before or not.
I've written screenplays, so yes, okay, they're so very different.
Yeah, very straightforward. This happens and then this happens. Mm-hmm. God, yeah. So it was quite a learning curve going the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's very different because I've also written like short stories and done like that kind of writing too. And I've also written poetry. So it's all like different kind of. Yeah, that's a very different kind of format.
Yeah, yeah, you can keep that.
But yeah, screenwriting compared to a novel is a very different animal altogether.
Yeah.
So
no question.
So it's not just you know, like I said, you are doing the finished product there. No matter what. So, yeah. And so this surfacing is very cinematic. It's written very much like that. Like I could picture everything very clearly. And since it was originally a screenplay too, do you have any desire then to adapt it, or if somebody else wanted to adapt it or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it was a little bit of a bummer. Like, I felt like I was backtracking by making it a book instead. And, you know, I'm envisioning everything as I'm writing it again for like the second or third time. I mean, like I said, you read it. So, I mean, you know, it would take a lot of zeros on a check to make that, you know, accurate. Yeah. There's no cutting corners in that. But yeah, I mean, if for some reason somebody in the future like was like, hey, let's adapt this and make out, like, yeah, I'm on board. So because I already understand everybody on paper so well. So yeah, no question. 100% would do it.
Yeah. And I mean, this, the novel kind of ends in a way where I could even see there being like a sequel to this. Mm-hmm. Are there any plans for that? Like, I mean, that you could say or anything?
Yeah, no, I mean, there is. And I mean, I know it seems more open-ended for Avery. But I think what I'd like, because we were talking about, you know, how shut off Teddy is, I'd like to do another one, which is already, it had been in screenplay format, but it was as something else, doing one about him, like life out after the division. Even, you know, I'd have to figure out how I got him out, of course, without, without the threat of death, of course. And, kind of him like having like, you know, the aftermath, dealing with coming to terms with everything that he did. Mm-hmm. Because I guess I find myself caring about that character more than any of them. But I mean, I would absolutely find a way to intertwine, you know, Abe or Avery for a little bit. But no, I have a plan to do at least one follow-up for surfacing.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Because, yeah, I had a feeling just reading it. I was like, oh, I wonder if this is something that will become like a series of books or, yeah.
Yeah. So. No, I tip my hat off to anybody who can turn like one idea into like several books, because to me it seems impossible. But again, because I'm pretty fresh to turning things into books. So,
yeah.
You know, when you see people who have like book 8 of 9, I'm like, how, what is it? What happens?
That's true. Some people, you know, and some people turn out novels in like, you know, 2 days or something like that.
I know. I'm like, after an hour and a half, I want to blow my head off. I'm like, oh, God, it's taking forever.
Yeah. I think everybody kind of approaches it differently. Everybody writes differently and has a different process, you know, and whatever can make you, because writing can also be not only lonely, but it can be a very like emotionally draining process as well. So,
oh,
like,
totally.
Like you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Cause yeah. You're, yeah. And so I'm curious then, are there parts of you then in these characters, since, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think I'd have a hard time believing if anybody said that there wasn't a little bit of themselves in at least one of their characters. I mean, Teddy, other than it being, you know, my dog, related to my dog, I would say, you know, my respect for anybody who does anything that they don't want to do just to serve their country, you know, whether it could be viewed as, you know, good or bad, that I think it all serves a purpose. And then just, I think Abe, I mean, I've never been a heavy drinker, so I can't say that's me. No, Abe, I actually, because, his younger brother that he meets up with in that one of those chapters is actually a character that's on screen in the movie I did about the border crisis. So that was just kind of like a fun callback for me and anybody that had seen it. And then I guess Avery, I mean, I think I would have to say her a little bit because of just the relationship that I have with my dad. You know, it's not horrible by any means. I'm not the first person to have like dad issues or whatever. But you know, there's a father figure there, maybe not as much as you want, but yeah. Also at the same time, you have to think like, would I have turned out, or would she have turned out, you know, worse if dad had been there more so, you know? So I think maybe the absence of one parent kind of, you know, prepares you for the harshness of the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, that's my sob story.
No, but yeah. I do agree that sometimes it can, that the absence of a parent, even if the parent is there, and they can still be absent. So,
oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's probably a dash of me probably in a little of the, you know, few of the characters, even if I can't recognize it.
And I think that just happens automatically, even if you're not planning on it. Like you said,
oh, I can't imagine how tough it would be to like try and write somebody that was not any of you. I think by default there's a little bit there. So
yeah, I don't think it would be as good, honestly, because I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you already did mention a little bit of some plans that you have for upcoming projects, but are there any other things that you're working on right now that you can talk about? Or
I'm real close to finishing putting one of my other screenplays into novel format. It's a little bit of a departure from this one. It's more along the lines of, I would say, I don't know, it's everybody loves serial mystery thrillers. Yeah. So it's along the lines of that, but it's, again, it's three characters. Two of them are detectives, and one of them, the main point that you go from is a guy that is basically becoming a serial killer. So it doesn't dump you in the middle of his, like, you know, he's been doing it for a while. So I kind of wanted to do, and I just love deep character studies. So I'm, you know, the arc is him going from, you know, not that to kind of falling into it, just kind of based on his personality a little bit. So, but I think it all takes place, the time period I want to do, I want it to take place like within 2 weeks. So it's, you know, yeah, my goal with it is to be that somebody that makes these people disappear so quickly, like if you keep turning over cases, it makes it harder for the cops to catch you because they have to deal with a new one and a new one and a new one so rapidly. So that's my thought process. If he can do it so quickly, could he get away with it? You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
but we'll see if it works out.
Huh. No, awesome. I love serial killer stories in movies.
Oh,
and stuff,
yeah.
So yeah,
that's, you and me both.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah. I used to have, when I was younger, I'd be like, why are you so interested in this stuff? I'm like, no, it's not like a weird thing. It's just, I just find it fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, to see those character studies. And it's, character studies are always interesting, I think.
Oh, so, totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, wonderful. Well, I look forward to that and other projects from you. So thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and speak with us today. And it was a pleasure reading your novel as well.
Thank you.
So thank you. And good luck with it, too. I think it's really well. I mean, for this being your first, of course, you have experience writing. But with this being your first novel, even if it wasn't your first novel, it's pretty well. It's really well written. Like I said, I can visualize everything.
No, so. Thank you. Yeah, with the exception of a few probably spelling errors and grammatical stuff. Yeah,
you get, well, that happens.
You get hypnosis looking at it, and you're like, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you again. And if you just want to tell all of our listeners where they can find you and follow you.
I'm kind of I'm pretty, you know, even though I'm only 33, I'm not young, but I'm not old. I am pretty old school in terms of, like, I don't use any social media. I do have a newsletter. But I mean, if you want to get on that, you could just email me at norescues@gmail.com. And then I have just an author profile on, you know, the Amazon that kind of gives dates for my upcoming projects. But I've never been like a Facebook or an Instagram type person. It's just I'm terrible at promoting myself. I'd rather just put the work out there and let it speak for itself and gain its own momentum.
No, yeah. I can understand that. I mean, I'm on social media all the time, but that's...
It totally makes sense for what you're doing, yes.
But I understand wanting to avoid it. Believe me, there are times when I do not want to be on there, but I totally get it. Well, and I'll put a link in the show notes as well to your Amazon page as well.
Okay,
so
thank you.
So people can find that quickly. You're welcome.
Great.
Well, thank you again so much. Thank you.
No, thank you.
And this is Erin. You can follow me on Twitter at eAprilBeauty. The E and the A and the B are capitalized. Be sure to like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/itsafandomthingpod. On Twitter at fandomthingpod. No, it's in that one. On Instagram at itsafandomthingpod. If you would like to be a potential interview guest, feel free to reach out to us via our website, itsafandomthingpod.com. Hit the contact us button there. You can also email us directly at itsafandomthingpod@gmail.com. So until next time, remember, it's a fandom thing. Black Lives Matter and stop Asian hate.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.